It's Monday, Jules, and we have our Champions League semi-finalists. Two Ligue 1 teams, two Bundesliga teams. I am sure there's a real deep meaning in it. Last two World Cup winning nations as well.
Of course.
As you know, I think that's all nonsense. But anyway, we'll be dealing with that. We'll be dealing with that later. We'll be talking about this tremendous fallout at Barcelona. Setien on his way.
Yeah.
Lionel Messi too. Maybe. Who knows? We'll have some quick hits. But let's start with Mark Ogden and Pep. Augie, welcome to the show. Lyon, after upsetting Juventus, they upset Manchester City as well. What really struck me is I could see Lyon beating them on some sort of big counter-attacking trip, but I didn't expect Lyon to beat them against the City team that lines up in a 3-5-2, leaves out the Silva brothers, plays a 19-year-old with what, like a handful of first-team appearances to his name, and 35-year-old Fernandinho in a back three. What was Pep thinking?
Well, nobody really knows what Pep was thinking because it was such a strange formation to kind of select for the game and selection as well. It's, you know, what it strikes me is that it was a selection based on fear. He doesn't trust his centre-halves, so he went with, you know, a strange defensive formation. Then he picked two holding midfielders in Rodri and Gundogan, and he picked a team completely devoid of flair. You're right, you know, no Bernardo Silva, no David Silva, no Phil Foden. Riyad Mahrez came on second half. It was just a very strange selection, and for me, it shows that, you know, Pep's almost like the golfer now that's got the yips and he can't put from a close range. He overthinks the Champions League to the point where his past failures are now adding up and creating doubt. And he's going into a game against the seventh best team in France, racked with self doubt. You know, really, he should have just done what he did against Real Madrid, picked his best team, and I think they would have won that game comfortably. But it just put so much doubt and uncertainty into the minds of his players. He confused his players, confused everybody. Even still, they should have beaten Lyon, but, you know, they got what they deserved.
I think it's also compounded by, you didn't mention João Cancelo there too. Obviously, he can play right back and left back. I think he's played, what, like two games down the left this season, and then he ends up moving him. And yet he plays him on the left in that side. I'd also throw in the fact that at the restart, you know, this is all they were playing for. They weren't going to win the title. They weren't going to drop out of top four. You basically had 2 months to prepare for this eventuality. I got to ask, Mark, I know you're writing a column about this. Does this start to cast doubt on Pep? Because you know my view. My view is the guy's still a genius, and in the past 3 years, he was actually legit unlucky to go out. People disagree with that. This year, they deserve to go out. Can you talk a bit about that? Do people like me give him a free pass?
I think some people do, yeah. I think that a lot of it is based on what happened at Barcelona between, you know, 2008 and 2012 when he was there. Fantastic, arguably the greatest team that the Champions League has ever seen. So obviously he gets a lot of kudos for that. But, you know, when you're hot, you're hot. But Pep's have been hot in the Champions League for nearly 10 years now. You know, 2011 was his last final. It's such a long time. And it's since then that he's not even come close with Bayern or Man City. So this thing about Pep's a genius, well, geniuses find a way, don't they? They don't overthink things. They don't get wrapped by self-doubt. They don't worry about the seventh best team in France. You know, they just win. And I think, you know, I've made this point in my column today that Champions League great, the great manager, they tend to win their twos and threes in short periods of time. You know, Bob Paisley went 3 in 7 years. Zidane won 3 on the bounce. You know, Carlo Ancelotti had 11 years between his first and his third, but he only waited 7 years between his second and his third. Now, you know, if Pep is to win the Champions League again, only Jupp Heynckes has waited longer than Pep has now. Jupp Heynckes waited 15 years between winning at Real Madrid and winning at Bayern Munich. No, so if Pep is waiting 10 plus years to win his third Champions League, it doesn't say that he's a genius to me. It could even be the case that he was the manager who had the best team in the world with the best player in the world at the right time. Since then, he's not won anything in the Champions League.
I mean, in fairness, he built that team in Barcelona and he built it pretty well. He had a lot of talent, but he has a lot of talent at Man City. Others have plenty of talent as well and didn't do well.
He built this Bayern Munich team. Too,
yeah, as well, yeah. And it's always a game of thin margin, as we've been saying. But what I loved about Saturday night, and I won't complain because, you know, Pep messed things up so much that we have another French club now in the semi-final. But just imagine where, even if you're a Man City player, but everybody else, you play against Aubameyang and you say, like, do I need to change my defence, my back four? No. As quick as Aubameyang is. You play against Marcus Rashford and Anthony Martial. Do I change my back four? No. You keep your back four. You don't go to a back three, regardless of how quick they are and how good they are. You play against, I don't know, Jamie Vardy. Do you change your back four into a back three? No, no. And then you play against Carl Toko Ekambi and you think, hang on a minute. Oh, it's Carl Toko Ekambi. No, what can I do? Hang on, let me think. And that nervousness, you know, and that's... And then he changes. And like, Toko Ekambi, we're talking. And I love him. He's a great guy. And he's from Paris, so there even better. Right. But man, come
look,
on.
Please, be serious.
Jules is obviously disappointed here in Pep.
Yeah.
What is the fallout here? Or is there any fallout? Because obviously Pep's contract is expiring in 2021. Hmm. We all assume that would easily be sorted because there's no Champions League ban and whatever. I get the sense that, well, Sheikh Mansour is not a football fan. Probably doesn't even really own the club, so doesn't really care. But Khaldun's got other stuff to worry about. Soriano and Cheeky are Pep's boys from back at the camp now.
Yeah.
This doesn't put any doubt in his future. Is there any reaction from City fans starting to question this? There's no issue. He will remain even beyond next season, right?
Well, I mean, there's certainly reaction from City fans that I speak to that they're angry with Pepe's selection, that they think he's got a blind spot with Gundogan, they think he just brings nothing to the team. So there,
yeah,
there is
no,
a
no, no, but not the game, long that term, long term.
As well.
No, but the City fans will say that he does have strange, you know, selections at times, but, you know, that's a multi-layered question in terms of, is he safe? Well, he's safe for now, for a good while yet, because of what you explained, the fact that if he goes, it's like pulling a plug out of a bath, because Soriano would go and Beguiristan would go fairly soon. What Sheikh Mansour likes about Pep is the fact that, you know, he brings kudos to Man City. He's the greatest manager, coach, you know, in the world, the most recognisable. It's great for City's brand. But the issue comes when Pep is no longer the most, you know, famous and eye-catching coach. Maybe it would be Julian Nagelsmann next or Thomas Tuchel. You know, these guys that are in, the guys that are the new wave, I guess. So Pep brings a lot of associated glitz and glamour to City, but, you know, let's be honest, he's won fantastically in the Premier League. I'm not questioning Pep's greatness as a manager. He's been amazing in the Premier League, but I'm questioning his greatness in the Champions League. He needs to show now that he can do it without Lionel Messi, without Barcelona. But in terms of his future, the only person that decides his future at Man City for me is Pep Guardiola. I don't think the club will make it.
Mark, while we have you, can't help but notice that the world capital of football, Manchester, is out of Europe.
It's not a good weekend.
I know. United last night. I mean, look, I know Sevilla have got the stardust of the Europa League and whatever, but that wasn't good, was it?
No, it wasn't. It was, first of all, they looked absolutely dead on the feet in the second half. They looked like they were worn out, but that is Solskjaer's fault for picking the same team all the time, not giving these guys a rest. But
he doesn't have many options either.
Okay, excuse me.
What?
These guys had a rest against LASK, yeah?
No, I mean, come on. I'm sorry.
Some people had to go and play the Europa League second legs. These guys did not. They played the Muppet Show against LASK because they were 5-0 up from the first leg. And then they, against Copenhagen, fine. It's one game.
They played 120 minutes, though.
The season's over a year old. That's what I mean. You know, we're talking the longest season in history, and the same players seem to play every week. Look, I think what last night showed us that United's issue is depth. They have no depth, and we keep getting told how great the front three are, and they've got great potential, but they are still quite young, and they missed so many chances last night. They haven't got a predator up front, a real 25 goals a season, man. They've got issues in every area, and they've certainly got issues on the bench, because it was 86 minutes before he made a change last night. 86 minutes when he chased the goal. But you look at the bench, he brought on Daniel James, and that tells you why he didn't bring on Daniel James earlier, because he doesn't do anything, and neither does Juan Mata anymore, and neither does Timothy Fosu-Mensah, but these are the only options he had. Odion Ighalo. So United need depth, and the problem they've got right now is that they're all obsessed with Jadon Sancho. That'll probably cost £100 million, and Sancho will make them better, but they've got three or four, you know, holes to plug in the team, which I don't see them plugging all of them right now.
Just, are you buying this United, poor United, poverty of talent on the bench, nobody there?
You have to admit that they one of the big issues is the depth, the absence of depth, right?
I don't think it's a well-constructed team, but the same people were talking about, oh, Ighalo is so good, we need to keep him around.
No, I think he should have brought Ighalo on earlier. And again, not react to Sevilla's second goal to say like, oh, hang on, now we're going to lose. Now I need to do something. Even at 1-1, he could have done something and changed, like brought Ighalo on, play Ighalo and Martial up front. I mean, Greenwood didn't have a really good game, which we kind of knew in a sense that he's only 18. There's a point where he would show his limit in certain kind of games like this one. The level of that Sevilla team was too big. Reguilón was too good of a defender to, for Greenwood to do anything, and he had enough game. But that's okay. It happens. But I think he should have changed much quicker than what he did, really. And I think United could have some regrets because they had enough chances to score way before Sevilla scored their second goal, and then you can't defend like this.
Does Sevilla also have a better manager than Manchester United?
I don't know. He's got...
Who's a better man? Who would you rather have managing your team?
I would rather have Lopetegui.
Okay, thank you.
But he also has a better squad. He also has a better squad as a whole. I'm not talking about a starting 11. He has a better squad. Don't give me... He has a better squad.
Well, okay. So let's bring us back to this, right? Because he has a director of football who assembled the squad. Nine of the 11
for not a lot of money.
Brought in recently. Is it still another recruitment issue with United? Is it that, like, oh, look, Sevilla have Monchi and United have Woodward and Arnold and the rest of the gang? Is that it? Are we going to go back to this old trope?
Well, it's just like Groundhog Day, isn't it?
It is.
Listen... United spend a lot of money, but they don't spend it very well. And that's the thing, isn't it? They don't spend it wisely. And, you know, I look at the players that Liverpool have signed, you know, in the last 3 or 4 years. They've signed players from Hull City, from Newcastle United, from, you know, Southampton. And they've done really well. United tend to want to shop at the top end of the market and get players. That's a good point.
United signed players from Leicester and from Crystal Palace and from Swansea.
Yeah, but they cost 80 million.
Yeah, but that was a first. Million.
That's the point. You can't just focus on the top big transfers. You also need squad players who don't cost as much as 80 million, but will improve your squad.
When was the last time United signed an Andy Robertson or a Gino Wijnaldum, a smart buy that has made, you know, for 8 or 10 million pounds has been worth much more years later? I can't think the last time they were clever in the transfer market. I just can't. I think you're going back to Javier Hernandez 10 years ago when they were actually astute and they beat somebody to a player. Since then, it's just been waste after waste after waste. Even with the guys who've signed, Maguire and Wan-Bissaka, they paid way over the odds because they panicked, because they're not very good at doing deals, because they start with a low offer, wait about a month, 6 weeks, waste a lot of time, and end up paying what the club wants them to spend in the first place anyway. So it's just bad. It's just not good, and it's not very streamlined.
Okay, I mean, to stick up for your boy Ed a tiny bit, that might have also had to do that the managers before this one, and Mourinho and Van Gaal, were two very powerful, very highly paid managers who, because you've invested a lot of money in them, they're going to get what they want. And when they fall in love with a player and demand a player, I think that might be part of the reason why they haven't necessarily been the best negotiators and ended up spending more money. Also, the other thing is they can afford the money. It's the one team in the world where you can say they can afford it. But I want to go back to the defense because I know it's a little bit like shooting fish in the barrel. But that back four, I thought, was absolutely appalling. And I'm not picking on them as individuals.
Well, but you can.
Wan-Bissaka had a really poor game defensively, and that's supposed to be a strength. Brandon Williams, he's very young. Okay, fine, give him a pass. But we don't see Brandon Williams turning into the next Dennis Irwin, do we?
No.
And Maguire, dude, you're supposed to be experienced. You're he's what, 27, 28 years old at this stage? And Lindelof, I'll just leave to you, Augie.
Well, I've never been a fan of Lindelof. If a centre-half can't head the ball, he's not a centre-half, and that's Lindelof. I think United's situation now is that the defence is so unreliable, you'd have to bring Chris Smalling back and say, right, there you go, you play centre-half with Harry Maguire. You know, Smalling has his limitations, but he's probably the best defender that United have got, and he spent a year elsewhere. So, but this is what I'm saying about all this fascination with Sancho, £100 million on Sancho. The big issue is at the back. Now, they've had a better record in the Premier League this season, much better than last season, but you find out the weaknesses of your team against top-quality opposition. And, you know, last night they were desperate. But I just want to go back on the point about United recruitment as well. You know, you talk about the powerful managers like Van Gaal and Mourinho. I remember the summer of 2017, Mourinho was desperate to get Perisic from Inter Milan, and the club were like, no, it's not worth it, You know, Perisic was fantastic the other night for Bayern against Barcelona, and that was 3 years on from when United didn't want to buy him. So I think one problem that United have had over the years is that the money experts have had too much influence over the football experts, and they've done deals based on what they think is long-term value rather than instant value. Now, they were right on certain things like, you know, not signing Jerome Boateng, but, you know, Mourinho wasn't that keen on signing Sanchez, but they signed him because of the box office hit. The wrong people are making the big decisions at Man United. The football people aren't being left to make the decisions. Well, they weren't. I think they've got a bigger voice, but there's still an imbalance there as to who makes the big decisions and who has the influence where it's needed.
Can you remind us who the football people are at the club? Because, again, I think a lot of people who maybe don't follow United that closely think that there's just Solskjaer and Woodward and nobody else. So you've got Mike Phelan there, yes?
Yeah.
You've got Michael Carrick as well, yeah?
Mike Phelan, Michael Carrick, Kieran McKenna. I think, you know, in terms of...
No, let's name these guys, because these are the people who signed Daniel James, yeah? These are the people who weigh in on Maguire. They're part of the conversation. Maybe they came out and they said, we like Maguire at 30 million, we don't like him at 70 million. We don't know this.
Beyond that, you know, beyond those people that you see on the bench, you've also got Jim Lawler, who was Alex Ferguson's chief scout, and he's still there as the chief scout. You've got Marcel Bouts, who was brought in by Louis van Gaal as an opposition scout and has been retained. You know, so they've got two senior scouts. And one thing I was told, that United have too many scouts. They've got about 55 scouts, whereas Liverpool have a much smaller number. So the United machine gets fed loads and loads of data about players here, players there, and it's overheating. There's too many names in there. The scout too many games.
For the right back, they had 900 names, and then he went down.
Yeah, and they were both 900.
There's not 900 right back in the world right now.
Last question.
They were actually boasting about that. United were briefing as if to say that's a good thing. We looked at 800 right backs. It's like, no, it's not a good thing. You should know the best five right backs. You don't need to identify 800 right backs. That tells you how bad your system is.
That was a big fat lies anyway. There's no 800 right backs in the
world. Would they be better off if there was one director of football? Everybody feeds in information to him. Solskjaer feeds what he wants. Scouts feed what they want. Woodward tells him what the budget is. And then this guy makes a call and then lives or dies by it. And if no they
one,
sign...
No one does that. Who does... Oh, hang on. Everybody else.
Monchi, maybe, yeah.
Oh, everybody else does that. Why don't you do the same? Like everybody else. Like all the top clubs, everybody. And he works all much right. better for them.
Augie, we're going to have to leave it there.
It's really well at Arsenal, hasn't it?
All right, so no trolling Arsenal. We'll be getting to that. Augie, thanks so much. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Now, Jules, I don't think it was a surprise that Barcelona should go out to Bayern Munich. It was an absolute surprise that Bayern should unleash such a gigantic can of whoop-ass on their backsides. The fallout from this, I kind of feel it would have been similar, regardless, even if they'd lost 2-1 or whatever. Super harsh words afterwards. Kike Setién... It's obvious he's gone. It was reported last night. Bartomeu confirmed it to Spanish station. We should get confirmation of it on Monday. Obviously, we're taping early in the morning.
Yeah,
that part's not a surprise. What was a surprise, or maybe it shouldn't be, is there's even words that Lionel Messi, who of course, for those who don't know, has that sort of annual contract thing where he can leave. You know, he's mulling his future elsewhere. Well, first of all, I'll start with Messi because it's obviously bigger than Setién.
Yeah.
Are we to buy this, or is this just like a tactical move, if it's true?
So I think what's clear is that he doesn't want to work with the current board, Bartomeu especially. So if Bartomeu decides to stay and the elections don't happen for another 6 months maybe, or even a year where they're planned next summer, then I think Messi said, you know what, I'm not having this. I'm going now. Let me go.
Well, they can't have... I mean, like, Here's the thing, though. Like, they can't have... I mean, the elections take time, right? You have to call them. You have a campaign. You've got to... So the elections aren't going to happen before the start of next season.
No, but Bartomeu can resign and call up elections to be brought up in October, for example.
But then you still have the issue of who selects Etienne's replacement.
Yeah.
You still have the issue of, I mean, again, this could be confirmed later today as we tape Monday morning. You'd still have the issue of who's going to replace your boy Eric Abidal if he goes, or Oscar Grau, or Planas. I mean,
it's a big mess.
It is a really messy situation.
Well, yeah. Whatever Messi wants to do and what he will do, I still think he's too loyal to that club. This is his life. He's Barcelona, to be fair. I can't see him living right now, but you could see why he's not happy. He hasn't been happy for much of the season, where there's a lot of things that have gone so bad in the last 3 years, especially. And why that humiliation is the consequence of all those things, all the dysfunction, all the issues, all the tension, all the wrong choices. I mean, when you look at that squad, and especially the players over 30 already, Vidal, Busquets, Piqué, all with contracts going up to 2023, 2024 for some of them. Jordi Alba is under contract for another 4 years. 4 years! I mean, who gave out those contracts? Who
Eric
gave
Abidal.
All that money? Yeah, no, but no. I think if you're Messi right now and you're looking at it, and you're thinking, like, come on, this is not acceptable.
I mean, I think, well, a couple of things. First of all, I forgot to do this. We need to give a shout out to our man, Stuart Robson.
Indeed.
Who didn't just make the prediction that Bayern would win. Okay, thank you, Captain Obvious.
We all did, yeah.
But told us exactly tactically what would happen in his reading of it on the show last week. Absolutely nailed it. You can go back to listen to it and why Robbo is a guru.
Yeah.
But I think the difficulty is, whoever comes in is going to have to operate within pretty tight budgets. So if you're glass half full, you can say, oh, look, they still have arguably the best goalkeeper in the world. They still have arguably the best or one of the best midfield playmakers in the world in Frankie de Jong.
Yeah, yeah.
Arguably, they have the best teenager in the world in Ansu Fati.
Yeah.
And, of course, they have arguably the best player in the world, or probably the best player in the world. That's your starting point. But the problem is, you've got all these big contracts. How do you shift these players elsewhere?
You struggle. You try, but one, it's really the wrong summer. You know, of all the summers, this is the pandemic summer where clubs won't spend much. They would be very careful, and rightly so. So, wrong time. I mean, again, unless a lot of them go for free, which you can do, I guess. But as you said, if money doesn't come in, they won't have much to spend. And certainly if you want an overhaul of that squad, you will need some money to come in and then to reinvest it. They've got youngsters who are coming in, like Pedrinho, who's very exciting but very, very young. You still have Ricky Puig, for example. You still have Antoine Griezmann. You've got Trincao, who will be coming from Braga. But again, this is an unproven player. I don't even know where you start. Do you see what I mean? Where do you even start?
I think what we can possibly imagine is other deals like the Pjanic for Archer deal.
Yeah.
Where, you know, these are basically accounting shortcuts where you swap the player for another unwanted player elsewhere, and then these guys take longer, they sign longer contracts, effectively though for less money on an annual basis.
But who would want to swap Vidal or Suarez?
I don't know. I'm thinking out loud. A Vidal for Ramsey swap, for example, right? Where you're Aaron Ramsey, maybe you take less money, but you get to play with Lionel Messi, you move to Barcelona. I don't know. Look, it's garbage.
The best, yeah.
But you can only do it. You can only do it between teams that have these types of highly paid players. I want to give a shout out to Gerard Piqué, because obviously Messi's going to be part of the future. I think he's going to shape the next election when it comes.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I don't think there's any question there. Gerard Piqué has come out and said, look, I'll leave if it makes this club better. That's how much I love this club.
But he said that knowing that he's not going to, right?
I think Piqué is kind of the least of their problems this year. But if he does leave, you know he's going to be back to be Barcelona president one day.
At some point.
I think we could take it as a given. A lot of talk in terms of managers. Ronald Koeman, who to me just seems like this idiotic thing. Yeah, let's go and get the guy he's got a contract right now.
It would do both, right? It would both the Dutch national team and Barcelona.
Oh, is that what he would do?
I think that's the idea. He's not. It's not going to give up on Holland
ahead of Euro 2020.
Yeah,
like, it seems so idiotic. This guy. It's almost like this guy's got somebody parked there to put his name out every time. I mean, honestly. So you want a guy who's going to vote half his time to Barcelona at the moment when they need it most. Plus, it's Ronald Koeman. With all due respect.
All due respect.
You share the two jobs and be effective when you're just dropping into a club that is an absolute dumpster fire and where there is so much work to be done and where there are elections around the corner. Does he even want his head to explode that way?
Yeah. I I'm not a big fan of him as a manager, full stop. Okay, there was a good season at Southampton, but we also saw at Everton when he had money to spend to build a competitive side where he was completely out of his depth and nothing was working. And for me, that's the real Ronald Koeman. And maybe he's someone that I just don't think he's made for top clubs. That's it. And maybe it's unfair criticism. I don't know. I met him a couple of times. He was on BT Sport to do some Champions League coverage. We had a nice chat. He was a nice guy.
He's a nice guy. I'm just wondering, would you take the job now?
On his point of view, that is his dream. In a way, he probably thinks that this is the only time that he could come.
Yeah, that's more appealing than winning the Euros with Holland, yeah?
Well, you can still do both, I guess, maybe. But also, if you said no now to Barcelona, that train might not come back again. And I think he would maybe regret not having said yes, not having taking this opportunity, Barcelona, his former club, and etc. But I would not have touched that job in a million years.
Yeah. It seems like this whole idea with going back and to people who know the club and the boot,
What don't you like about him? Well, it's tactically, it's management, is the work ethic, because we know he's not very often on the training pitch.
Okay, so I think tactically he knows his onions. I don't know how passionate and how intense he is about it. He's sort of moved much more into the man management style, which I think suits the national team, perhaps.
Exactly.
I'm not a huge fan about that. I don't know that you necessarily need a messiah. You need a situational manager. But the thing is, they had a situational manager in Valverde, right? Yep. Valverde was the guy who was the man manager. He wasn't committed. He wasn't an ideologue, blah, blah, blah. It just seems to me like you're getting back to that, except you're getting somebody who's much more expensive and somebody who, I repeat, has another job.
Yeah.
Like, the Euros are coming up, pandemic permitting, in 9 months. If I'm the Dutch FA, I'm angry about this.
You can't do both jobs properly. It's impossible. I don't think so. It had happened before, and the feud had to sort of kind of the same time. I just don't think you can focus on one and not more, as much on both jobs at the same time. It just doesn't work like that.
Sport, one of the two daily sports papers in Barcelona, very imaginatively bringing up Neymar again.
Yeah! It's been a long time.
I know. Well done. Benvenuto or whatever else. Nah, ain't gonna happen, yeah?
Well, I mean, I'm sure Neymar is watching the Bayern Munich game thinking, like, I want to be part of this. This is amazing. Like, this is so appealing. I want to be... Bring me back. I want to be there. I want to play with Nelson Semedo, I want to be part of that. Sergio Roberto, I love you. I'm sure he does. He's not going to... PSG would never let him go anywhere. So, and he doesn't want to go back there.
All right. Final point on this, just because him a little bit. I mean, I look at this. I don't see any chance that they're moving Luis Suarez. And obviously, Messi's going to do what Messi wants to do. So, there's another highly priced player there in the front three who's in and out of the size, Antoine Griezmann. I would assume he's got a little bit of a market. And maybe if he says, you know what, I'm willing to go somewhere else, maybe for a year, whether alone, a Coutinho situation. Is that likely to be his mindset? Or is his mindset more like, hey, look, I'm in Barcelona. I'm going to prove to the manager that I deserve to be here.
Very much so. I mean, at least that's the last time I heard from the clan. That was the idea. It was like, I don't want to go anywhere. I'm here. I'm happy to be here. This is one of the greatest clubs in the world, in the history of the game. And I want to prove myself. I want to be successful here. And at no point someone told me he's had enough already. He wants to go back. He could go anywhere. And also, they want to stay in Spain, the Griezmann family. So he's not going to go on loan to Real Madrid. So I don't think there's any way out. Just quickly, on Eric Abidal. Eric Abidal is a nice guy. We all know what happened to him health-wise and all of that. Why do some players, ex-pros, think that it's easy to go and become a sporting director? Sporting director is not a job that you just do. You know, oh, I don't know what to do. Let me get... Oh, it's easy to sign players. That's where I'm going to go. No, it's not easy. That's why you have some guys who are sporting directors for a reason, who have the knowledge and the scouting network and the structure in place, or they put that structure in place. Why do they all, and it's not just Abidal, but a lot of other things, like, what can I do next?
Edu.
Sporting director is easy. Let's go and let's move there. Come on, please, dude. Yeah, do me a favor. This is not... And in a way, I'm glad that Eric Abidal got found out. Because, no, it's not easy. Not everybody can do it.
You're right. And I mentioned Edu there, but I was wrong, actually, because Edu did work his way to Arsenal. Whatever you think of him, you know, he had a job before in Brazil, and he was in that role. It's absolutely remarkable to me. I mean, I think the reason is that at some clubs, it's just a figurehead, right? He's not the person doing the actual scouting and decision-making. He's just kind of there to wave and to stand next to the guy when he holds up the shirt. He doesn't handle the financial side or whatever. And so maybe that's why a lot of people think that it can be done. I think good, what do you call it, sporting director, general manager, director of football, whatever you want to call it, head of recruitment, it's like being a coach. In most cases, you need to start at the bottom. You need to learn
the
job.
You learn it.
And there's more to learn because it's even more removed from what you do as a footballer, even more so than being a coach.
And even more maybe for a big club like Barcelona, you know, I don't know.
All the more so. All right, enough doom and gloom. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gav.
Sevilla are through into the Europa League final, beating Manchester United 2-1. Jules, who deserves the most love here out of Sevilla?
Eva Banega deserves so much love. Everybody who would have watched him this season, especially in the Europa League and especially in the quarterfinal and in the semi-final against the two English clubs, could just only be in love with him. He's a wonderful player. It's a shame that he's leaving La Liga and Sevilla and European football, but what a guy. I mean, he's not even fit. I mean, he's clearly eaten too much during lockdown, but it doesn't matter. The quality, technically, the vision is just...
One of those raffish rogue geniuses who makes us fall in love.
You know, who's as good as on the asado than he is on the football pitch. Speaking of United, Gab, their defense didn't cover themselves in glory. But should the blame be spread around?
Of course it should. I mean, yes, they all made tremendous... All four of them, I thought, made huge mistakes at different times. When Bruno Fernandes called out Lindelof later, Lindelof got on his face. I'm kind of like, yeah, Lindelof, remember who you're talking to.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, I think the issues are also further up the pitch. They could have finished some of those chances. They were caught out. I just don't think this is a particularly well-coached team either. It's not a knock necessarily on Solskjaer, although I think he bears some of the responsibility
as
well.
I agree.
I mean, I don't think he's necessarily Mr. Tactical Genius. He's more of, you know, Mr. Manager, keep everybody happy. This is obviously something that needs to be addressed. And you know, the fact that we're focusing on those four and not on De Gea, who I don't think covered himself in glory either, picked ahead of Romero.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just a bit of a reminder here that for all the enthusiasm, there's still a long road back.
And they were wasteful in front of goal like they were against Copenhagen in the quarterfinal. They scored two goals so far, well, in that competition, only on penalties.
Keylor Navas is out of... it's just Paris now, sorry. It says
no, it's not.
It's just Paris, apparently, out of their semi-final clash with Leipzig. But Kylian Mbappe is starting, yes? So nothing to worry about then, yeah?
I would rather have Keylor Navas starting as well as Kylian Mbappe, as Marco Verratti.
But if you only had to pick one between Navas and Mbappe.
Yeah, okay, if I can pick one. But ideally, I would like to pick the strongest team. Mm-hmm. But no Navas, which is a shame, although Sergio Rico, who will replace him, has quite a good European pedigree. You know, he won the Europa League with Sevilla,
pedigree,
for example. He's
things.
A decent keeper. No Marco Verratti, which is a shame again as well. But Kylian is back. Kylian will be starting and... When Kylian starts, you know, everything
is different.
It's a
bit special. I feel for Verratti because he's the only Italian left in the competition, unless I'm forgetting somebody.
Yeah, true. That's true, actually. Thomas Tuchel was the German coaching wunderkind before Julian Nagelsmann became the German coaching wunderkind. Gab, why does this happen in Germany and nowhere else?
Because in Germany, the manager isn't that important because he's there for the first team. They've got a bunch of other people around them. And so it's easier to replace these guys. It's easier to slot somebody in younger. I think players perhaps respond differently to younger managers as well. A lot of these guys, certainly Nagelsmann's case, he started out coaching the youth team,
yeah,
and then they moved him up. And it's a different approach. There's pros and cons, but man, both these guys, I think, really, really sharp.
Yeah, and for the people who don't know the backstory, Julian Nagelsmann used to play...
By now, everybody does, because they've been repeated endlessly.
I know, but still, I think it's a great story that Nagelsmann played under Tuchel for Augsburg reserve team and then got a bad injury when he was 19, had to stop his career, and Tuchel gave him a little job amongst his staff to scout the opposition and etc. And, 13 years later, they faced each other in the Champions League semi-final. I think it's brilliant.
Who'd have thunk it? Arsenal have been busy. They made Williams signing on a 3-year free agent deal official, which we knew was going to happen. They continue to sweat on Aubameyang. People can say, oh no, it's happening. I don't know. Hasn't happened yet, but presumably will. And perhaps more importantly, they've ditched Raul Sanjehi. It's kind of weird to me that you would do it now as opposed to at the end of the season.
What do you mean at the end of which season?
Yeah, good boy.
The season is over. I mean, I think they...
Why is he gone?
Well,
Your buddy Vinay Vinko or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
He doesn't mention this. Oh, big thank you to Raul. Tell us why he's gone?
They had two heads, which is quite unusual. It's quite unusual to have two CEOs at a football club.
A football guy and a selling guy?
Yeah, and an admin guy. Okay. And I think they thought it was time for just one head, one CEO.
They thought, meaning who? Kronky thought?
Yeah, I think
the club,
as a whole, you know, they're going through like some sort of audit and they're reviewing really how the club is working, the structure of the club. And clearly they wanted Vinay to be the man in charge, the only man in charge, and have Edu as a sporting director with Mikel working a lot on the recruitment together. And maybe there was no room for Raul.
What I thought was funny was they actually said, we need to improve our communication to our fans and to the outside world. And he doesn't address the biggest question. Why is he gone? Because I'm finding this out from you. It's a restructure and this and that.
No, but I think, Raul...
You know what, Vinay, if you're listening, go do a press conference, take questions from fans, meet from media, and answer these questions, because people have a lot of questions about a lot of these deals that you're doing.
It's a bit difficult right now
Time. You know, listen, Raul never spoke. Edu never spoke. Right?
Yeah.
None of these people ever spoke.
I agree with you.
Just see the outcome.
No, I agree with you. They should do more in communication. But I think this is a way to move forward as well, and we will see if it's the right one. Gab, you talked about how Bayern were both humble and relentless in your column last week after the game against Barcelona. Do they need to change anything against Lyon and your boy, former Roma manager Rudy Garcia?
Yes, Rudy Garcia, of course, just started the season with 10 consecutive wins when he was at Roma. And then kind of the wheels came off. But to answer your question, I would be a little more wary about the high press.
Yeah.
But you know what? We've seen them not high press in games too. I think logic suggests defend a little bit deeper. Maybe allow a bit more of your quality to shine through. Maybe try to dominate the midfield. You certainly have so many guys who can pass the ball in there. I think weirdly Kimmich at right back isn't ideal. I'd love in a game like this, I would have loved him to have him in midfield, but that's fine.
But Pavard is back training, I think, so he might be fit.
It'll be curious. I think that is a call to make. I think he's going to continue with Kimmich at right back.
But if you think about the Dortmund game after the restart away, they played much deeper then.
Exactly. No, that's what I'm talking about. They can vary. Yeah, horses for courses,
But humble, was Leon Goretzka humble when he said it was fun to humiliate Leo Messi?
No. I'm talking about humble in the fact that they work for each other to a degree that you rarely see in big teams, because there generally is a hierarchy. That's what I'm talking about. Thomas Muller said it before the game. I think he delivered on it. All right, let me throw it back to you then, Jules. What is Rudy Garcia's secret sauce here? Because let's not forget, like Hansi Flick, he's a guy who took over in midseason. All this stuff about, you need time to build a team, to have an impact, blah, 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 keep your manager stability. It's all nonsense.
Really? Well, they finished seventh in the league. He didn't do any miracles in the league.
Are they higher up than when he replaced Silvinho? I believe
slightly,
so.
Slightly, but slightly, yeah. Yeah, but it was still not exceptional. However, what he did, which he deserves a lot of credit for, is one, find the right system and the right formula for them to play. He looked for a lot of things, but I think that 3-5-2 for the players that he has, both at the back with experience like Marcelo, quite a lot of talent. I think for Deneyer, he might not be everybody's cup of tea, but I think he's a good defender. And Marcel, who's a mix of the two, really, and it's quite funny the way he runs and the way he plays, but who's a good player too. And then in midfield with those three kids that we've mentioned, the names Alor, Kakré, Awar and Guimarães. Even the wing backs, I mean, everything. That system is perfect. He found it. They worked hard on it. Everybody knows exactly what to do, how to play, where to move. But then it's the team spirit, really, that I think he's worked really well with and on to create that togetherness, to create that unity that they have, and that belief that they can do a lot of great things in Europe.
What's the thinking? Because I looked at this and I thought, you know, when the draw was made, I'm like, ooh, you know, I'll get to see Dembele and Ryan play at some point, maybe Ryan off the bench, Ryan Cherki. But no, I get Tolo Ekambi and Rain Adele. Does he like hyphens? What is it?
So today, by the way, is Ryan Cherki's birthday, so happy birthday.
He's 17. He's ready to start today against Bayern, yeah?
And as you know, because we've told you already a lot, he's the next big thing in world football.
Along with Camavinga.
Along with Camavinga as well, who's a year older, But that's where I think he's been good as well, because he dropped Moussa Dembélé in Turin because he thought, okay, Kambi being more mobile will suit the way Lyon will play. And I think that worked. Same against City. Ren Adelaide, he likes a lot because he has that mobility. He's so good on the ball as well, and he's a very intelligent player in the runs that he makes. Dembélé is a finisher.
He's got that winning Arsenal DNA as well.
Oh, here we go.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
You're so mean.
No, I just remember him at Arsenal always being like that sort of double-barreled guy.
He was such an amazing talent at a very young age.
They all are. So was Henri Lansbury. But I always remember those double-barreled guys with like number 74 coming on at the end of like the Emirates Cup in the middle of the summer. Like that was my. But I'm glad that he's established himself.
He's improved a lot since. Yeah, he's improved a lot, and you know, and he's. His entrance against Juventus, I thought, was good. Against City as well, he brought something, movement, those runs. And I think they've got something there. I think Bayern, let's be honest, is a step too high now. And I think the whole fairy tale is going to stop on Wednesday night. But even to get that far, Garcia deserves a lot of credit. Gab, I know you love big theories based on small samples, but all four Champions League semi-finalists come from Germany and France, countries where the domestic league either ended early or didn't even restart at all. Does this mean that being rested is an advantage?
I knew you were being sarcastic there, because I hate these big theories. I hate the big theories where, like last season, because all the European Cup semi-finalists were from the Premier League, like, oh, the return of the Premier League. Oh, look, they're dominating now. And now, like, you know, now what, you're this year, you're not going to have any. You just had one semi-finalist. And it's like, does it mean the Premier League is rubbish? No. It all means it's a small sample. It's a knockout competition, especially this year. And the reference here was something that Damiano Tomasi, who I love and I have a ton of respect for, I don't even think he meant it this way. He's the head of the Italian Players Union. Yep. He's on the board at FIFA. He put out a tweet pointing out that, you know, teams like Atalanta and City played many more games at a much tighter pace than obviously Paris Saint-Germain and the German teams. And these teams are in the semi-final. And I'm like, yeah, but two things here. First of all, Bayern beating Barcelona, not a surprise, right?
Yeah.
They were favorites, so it's kind of self-fulfilling prophecy there. Equally, Paris Saint-Germain beating Atalanta, they were favorites. Better team, bigger team, self-fulfilling prophecy. Leipzig and Atletico Madrid, roughly even, I would say. So the only upset you're talking about is Lyon. And it's only an upset because Raheem Sterling doesn't finish and Ederson bobbles the ball. So what are we talking about? We're talking about a teeny tiny sample size. What bugs me even more is the people who are supposed to be expert in this. I'm not claiming to be an expert. The fitness coaches, the managers saying, oh, well, it's going to be tough for Paris Saint-Germain. They've only played two games and stuff. Oh, and you need to be playing regularly. Now all of a sudden this all goes out the window, so we don't hear from those people anymore. Now it's so important that they're rested. I don't know what the real advantage is. I just wish we would stop, either do a study, a real definitive study, but stop with this nonsense, knee-jerk reaction one way or the other. It's stupid, right?
Well, yeah, I think I agree with you. Although I was surprised how fit Lyon were in the last 25, 20 minutes against City, and how PSG as well were in the last 20 minutes against Atalanta, having hardly not played for 5 months. By the way, do you know the only point in common between all four semi-finalists?
I suspect I know, because I follow you on social media, but tell me.
They all have at least one player who came from the PSG academy, which I think is quite special. That PSG obviously have Kimpembe and other youngsters, Dagba and Bissou, who went from the academy, but they also have Kingsley Coman at Bayern Munich, who came through the PSG academy. They've got Moussa Dembélé at Lyon, who came through the PSG academy. And they've got Christopher Nkunku, who also came through the PSG academy. And to the case of Dembélé, Coman and Kimpembe, they played actually together in all the PSG youth team from the age of 12 all the way to under-19s before Dembélé and Coman left the club.
I am floored. I am floored by your love of Paris Saint-Germain, I tell you. The Zlatan saga continues. Milan are offering a package of bonuses that could pay him up to $6 million a year net, which for those keeping track at home would net out to be about £200,000 a week, something like that. Yep. Super agent Mino Raiola wants him to earn $7.5 million net, which is a lot more than that. And he wants the money guaranteed. Jules, he's a free agent. Who's going to win here?
Both will win, Gab, because they will find an agreement in between 6 and 7.5, and everybody will be happy. Zlatan will be happy, Mino will be happy, Milan will be happy, and as we saw after the restart, stop rolling your right, he was still very important for that team.
Neither one wins because you're paying him way too much money, and you're going to still have the Donnarumma problem.
Yeah, okay, but
man, have the courage to walk away. There's a price at which it makes sense. I honestly just like
what?
Yeah, Zlatan's important.
Yeah, so what?
So you go to Zlatan and you say, Zlatan, you don't need this money. You're richer than God. The clock is ticking.
You're what, you want him to come and like, go like, which what you said in the last show with Cavani. Oh, Ibra, come on, man. You're really rich. Come
you're
and play
Milan,
for £25 a week.
You're the king of Milan. What do you want? You want to go somewhere else? You think somebody else is going to give you this money? You want to go to China and live in the smog? Come on, man. Whatever. Up to you. Hey.
Inter take on Shakhtar in the other Europa League semi-final on Monday night. And by the time you hear this, maybe the game may be over. Gab, how important, if at all, is it that Steven Zhang flew back to Europe after 5 months in China for this game?
So Steven Zhang, for those who don't know, is the 20-something president of Inter and a fellow Penn Quaker, I might add. And because in Italy we're obsessed with silly tropes, and Conte in particular, the fact that he's been in China for 5 months supposedly has had this dramatic effect because Conte couldn't talk to him. Obviously, Conte said what he said after the game.
Yeah, there's no telephone between China and
Italy. It's really difficult.
Right?
I don't know. It's I guess maybe he doesn't have Zhang's number. That'd be funny. Anyway, so he was actually getting heat from the Italian media for being in China. God forbid he should go home where obviously they dealt with the pandemic, but it was obviously a lot less worse in China in the last few months than it was in Europe. God forbid he should do that. But anyway, he's flown to Germany now. So since this is supposedly so important to Conte, he will be there in the stands when they take on Shakhtar.
Imagine he jinxes them and they lose tonight.
It'll be hilarious. Yeah, no. Then I expect Conte to blame him for coming back. Chelsea are strongly linked with a trio of defenders, all of them English. John Stones, Lewis Dunk, and Ben Chilwell. Jules, you like any of these guys?
Not all of them. John Stones, I don't get it. I'm sorry. Ben Chilwell, I get it. Maybe not for the amount of money that so far Leicester seems to want.
Somebody's made this point. If it's going to be $80 million for Chilwell or $30 million for Reguilón, how is it even a conversation?
I don't know. I don't get it at all. And I still think this is not possible that Marina Granovskaya allows the club to spend $80 million on Ben Chilwell. I'm sorry, but
Well, the fact that it hasn't happened yet might suggest that she's
right. And Louis Dunk, I like Louis Dunk. He's got a funny name, obviously, for us basketball fans. But also, I think he's a very solid, good defender. Is he the answer to their defensive issues?
28 years old, asking price is $40 million.
Okay. You cut me before I could even say like, it depends of the price, and again, the age.
Okay. Now that you know the age and the price,
I knew how old Louis Dunk was. But I just think that, again, they could do better than either of those three, and more clever signings, in a way.
And, you know, I think, again, a lot of the talk here has come from, well, no, apart from Chilwell, the other two, I think a lot of the talk has come from agents, people close to the players, or the selling clubs. And I think that is indicative. I think Chilwell, they really, really like. And yeah, they're just hoping to get the price
But not
down.
For that price.
At that price, I don't think you do it.
There's a lot of things that we like, but come on.
Do you want to weigh in on Kai Havertz? Because I keep getting a hard time for saying that Chelsea's priority is in defense and not Kai Havertz. But, you know, I think he might still come. But if he comes, it's at the price. Do you have any wisdom on Kai Havertz? Do they need Kai Havertz?
I am convinced that everybody needs Kai Havertz, and if you can get him and also get your other positions strengthened when they have to be strengthened, then why not? I would be amazed if they only sign Kai Havertz and no defenders. I don't think that will happen.
No,
they're not that crazy. So, yeah. Gazzetta dello Sport are reporting that Cristiano Ronaldo is pushing for the club to go and sign Raul Jimenez. Gab, does that make sense to you?
Well, let's see. Who does Raul Jimenez play for?
Wolves. Who is his agent? Who's Cristiano's agent?
Who's all of Wolves' agent? Right? I think this is a throwaway, one of those, but it's indicative of those transfer stories that bounce around.
Yeah.
I'm going to go out on a limb and suggest that Cristiano Ronaldo hasn't actually spoken in public and says, like, yeah, we should sign Raul Jimenez. I think it's people putting two and two together about why they're linked with Raul Jimenez. He's a phenomenal striker. He's also somebody who is completely the wrong age profile for Juventus right now, 29 years old. Because he's coming from Wolves, he would cost you 60, 70, 80. I mean, it just makes zero sense, you know. Yeah, sell Dybala and replace him with Jimenez, who's older. Yeah, okay, yeah. That's good. It does seem sort of very naked thread that, you know, the Jimenez empire puts out there.
Course.
I'll tell you what, if I'm Jimenez, yeah, you might want to play for a bigger club, but you're happy at Wolves, you're scoring goals at Wolves, you're doing well at Wolves. I don't think he's under this huge pressure, or I don't think he's certainly not putting any pressure on the club to move. So
no, I agree with you.
Now, when we last saw Salomon Kalou, he was making a mockery of anti-coronavirus measures and getting fired from Hertha Berlin. Jules, where is he now?
A Botafogo, joga bonito! Amazing.
Botafogo were Clarence Seedorf.
Exactly. They were very impressed with Clarence Seedorf on every level, if you remember as well. Maybe it'll be the same with Kalou. I mean, I have to say, I love those stories of like Botafogo thinking like, yeah, great signing. You know, like I saw him doing kippy uppies. I'm not even sure he was that assured in his kippy uppies while he was presented in the Botafogo stadium. But hey, we will follow him. In Brazil.
O Glorioso is Botafogo's nickname, I believe.
And let's see how he plays. I think it could potentially be a very bad idea, but also a good idea, I guess, you know.
It's curious. It's very curious. There is a bit of an undertone, too, that he goes there as the pandemic absolutely hits its peak in Brazil, especially him. But look, we wish him well.
Yeah, of course, always. And finally, Gab, James Rodriguez said he would love more playing time at Real Madrid, but because of other people, he can't get on the pitch and the club won't let him leave. Are you buying this? Why would Real Madrid not want him to leave?
So, yeah, the club would 100%.
They drive you, mate.
Let you
they
leave.
Drive
yeah.
you.
Yeah, just after they drive Gareth Bale. The reality is, and the thing about him, I don't play because of other people. Yeah, what? Other people who are better and more productive than you, or who the manager thinks are better than you. I like the guy a lot. I don't think he's necessarily the sharpest tool in the box.
Well, even with his glasses and clean shaved and
so
the
he
nice
said these,
hair.
But the thing is, he said these things in a podcast, right? And it's in Spanish. So there's no issue of translation.
Yeah.
Presumably the guy, I think that dude's Colombian, right? I don't know. I think he still has something to give. I think it's a classic situation where you're in this position. If you want to sit there and count your cash, you sit there and count your cash. If you want to make this happen, you go and you say, look, I'm due X amount over the next 2 years. I'll take that money over the next 4 years plus bonuses. Thank you very much. So maybe somebody the next level down can afford to sign me.
Yeah.
It is funny, though, because Carlo Ancelotti, as you know, is a big James Rodriguez guy.
Yeah.
I guarantee I'm going to make a bold prediction and predict that he will be linked to Everton in the next week.
But you think some clubs would want him, right? He's not. I mean, I know he hasn't played much.
He's not 100 years old. He's not somebody who has a bad attitude. He's
still a really good player, right? If you put him in the right environment, maybe if you build the team a bit, or at least your attacking structure around him.
That's the thing. You got to build the team around him, right? Because he is a number 10. That's really where he's. I mean, they got the 1 year where he's in the midfield three out of him, where he ran himself into the ground. But that's a bigger ask now at this phase of his career. So, I think he's worth somebody taking a gamble on. But again, with his wages, he's got to make that happen and make a bit of a sacrifice there. And I guarantee you, it's not Real Madrid saying, oh, no, we need to keep it around.
Definitely not.
Vincent Kompany is retiring from football. I'm assuming he's going to stick around at Anderlecht as in his managerial or director of football role. Your thoughts?
It's funny that, because even when he was playing last season, I thought he had retired already. He was that bad. I mean, I think it's tricky to be a player and a coach at the same time. Let's focus on being a coach, Vinny. He's probably much, much better right now. Talking about Vincent Kompany, one of his former teammates, Joe Hart, is on his way to Spurs, Gab.
Yes, and I'm sure that he's only there to be the third goalkeeper, to be the new Michel Form, I would assume. And I bet that the real selling point was that Instagram post of him with all the muscles out, where he looked like some psychotic professional wrestler. He looked kind of like the Ultimate Warrior's more clean-shaven little brother. Anyway, that's all we've got time for this week. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for spending your time with us. We're going to be back on Thursday. We'll be looking ahead to two huge European clients.